The Unshackled Waves, episode 243.
Broadcasting from Melbourne, Australia, this is The Unshackled Waves with Tim Wills, brought to you by theunshackled.net.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another Waves episode. After Australia went to the polls on May 18th, it was Europe's turn to go to the polls, with all European Union member states going to the polls to elect 751 MEPs in the European Parliament for the next 5 years. The UK still participated in this election due to the Brexit deadline being extended by Theresa May until October. But before the UK results were announced, with Nigel Farage's new Brexit Party coming first with over 30% of the vote, Theresa May announced her intention to resign as Conservative Party leader and Prime Minister after the Parliament would not agree to her Brexit deal and the Conservative Party would not agree to hold a second referendum. Man, who has been following the European elections closely and the Brexit Party in particular, is the Unshackled's own editor-at-large, Steele Archer. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Tim. Thanks very much. It's good to be here. Europe is such an amazing political environment. That's why I like concentrating on Europe and writing and doing things for the Unshackled on Europe. It's just incredible. And we live in incredible times.
Now, the winners of the European elections as a whole, there's all these different parliamentary groups. It's confusing a lot of the time, but the winners were the hard Eurosceptic groups and also the hard pro-EU groups. For example, one of the hard Eurosceptic groups is the Europe of Freedom and Direct Democracy, that has the Brexit Party, the Five Star Movement in Italy. They got 56 seats up 15.
Yeah, the Five Star Movement is a very hardcore party. They're anti-immigration, anti the Mediterranean crisis, I guess. Pro sort of Italian nationalist feeling. It's an incredibly dynamic movement. But it's very different to the Brexit Party in the north. There, it's a very different sort of less hard. Brexit Party feels a lot less hardline compared to some of these other ones.
And then there's the European People's Party, which is the conservative pro Europe party. So it has Change UK, known as the Cuck Party. Actually what it is. That was a coming together of soft conservatives and Labour MPs who didn't like the
Change UK was only launched two weeks, I think, before Nigel Farage's Brexit Party, and it did a dismal. I mean, it got less than 3% of the vote. The lady, I forget her name now, she went on Good Morning Britain, and she was saying, "Oh, the Brexit Party did absolutely terribly in the election." I mean, this woman's a joke. Change UK is a joke. But yeah, soft conservative pro. She actually essentially hurt by not merging with some of these other, she should have either merged with the Greens, or she should have probably merged with Lib Dems, and they would have done a little bit better.
Yeah, the people in Britain, they went with the pro-Europe parties that already existed, the Liberal Democrats and the Greens. Now, the European People's Party, which also has the Christian Democrats in Germany, they won 179 seats, down 38 seats. Then there's the Europe of Nations and Freedom. That's more, well, I hate to use this term, but they're described as the far right group. So obviously their focus is on not just getting out of the EU, but also nationalism, against immigration to Europe. That contains the National Rally from France, which used to be the National Front of Marine Le Pen, the Party for Freedom in the Netherlands of Geert Wilders, the Lega Nord in Italy, which is Matteo Silva's party, and the Alternative for Deutschland in Germany, the new nationalist party there. They got 58 seats, up 22 seats.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at it sort of on a big scale, it's Germany that runs the EU, Europe. It's essentially a European sort of enterprise, it's a German sort of enterprise. And the more ADF that you get in there, the more of these nationalist types that you get in there, the weaker essentially the whole institution becomes, regardless of what the UK does. Because the UK has always had special privileges with, you know, being out of the Euro, being out of the Schengen zone, and a whole bunch of, they've always had a bunch of special privileges. But it's really Germany that you want if you to increase its nationalistic tendencies if you want the death of the EU superstate.
And as we touched upon, the European Liberals and the Greens, they all increased their representation in the European Parliament. But the Socialists and Social Democrats, the traditional centre-left parties, they all went down. And there was a trend all across Europe. They're going to the extremes. The centre collapsed.
Yeah, it's different. It's different to hear that what happened here in Australia. People rallied to the center because they're still going on the notion of the less of the two evils. So the same thing happened sort of in the United States as well. People rallied around Republican as opposed to a third party. We rallied around the Liberals as opposed to a third party away from Labor, because we knew that the Liberals are a center party, center left party, so we might as well not go radical center left, which is what Bill Shorten wanted. And in Europe, Europe is 52 countries. It's the smallest continent. There's 500 million people there. They have great animosity towards each other, all the different countries. It's not going to be some sort of united, happy, peaceful enterprise. And people there under their different nations have felt like they're not getting a good end of the deal. So they're having to go hard on either way, on the left and on the right, all these smaller countries. And because a lot of the big countries like Germany and France, they make a lot of these macro decisions based on what they can absorb in terms of punishment, and it just doesn't work in the smaller countries. If you're an Austrian or you're a Hungarian or you're a Greek or something else, you can't absorb that amount of pain that these larger countries can. So so they're going extreme. The center is collapsing, which is what Nigel Farage has been saying. 2012, you can go and check his speeches where he said the center will collapse, the radical rise of the far right and the far left will happen, and the UK doesn't want to be a part of that. So you know, that's a big push for Brexit, and that's why you had what we're going to talk about, is the Brexit party doing so incredibly well, I guess.
And UK went to the polls on a Thursday. That's their traditional voting day, but the votes weren't counted until the Sunday, because not to prejudice the other nations who still had to vote. But on the Friday, Theresa May, she announced that she was stepping down as Conservative Party leader on June 7th, but would remain as Prime Minister until a replacement Conservative Party leader is elected. There's now a Melbourne Cup field of candidates wanting to replace her. Now, everyone was saying, oh, she got very emotional, you can't help but feel sorry for her, but she was a failure as Prime Minister. I mean, she negotiated the worst possible Brexit deal, which was Brexit in name only. They were going to have all of the restrictions of the European Union, but not actually have a say in it.
Yeah, so Theresa May is incredibly funny, because although she said some of the words within Parliament itself, her actions didn't sort of translate to what she was saying she was trying to achieve. And what she was a Remainer. She didn't technically want to leave the European Union, and so she tried everything she could, which she's done it. She's succeeded to act over here on one position and actually push for another position. And you know, she had a little cry. It was kind of interesting, but she didn't in her resignation speech, she didn't talk about the issues that people wanted to hear. She talked about climate change, she talked about defense, she talked about honoring the people's referendum, none of which she's done. And climate change, she went on about that for a long, long time during her resignation speech. So it's like she's not hitting on the big ones of identity, of immigration, of crime, of knife crime in London. She's not talking about like the national feeling. You know, she's not talking about anything that the British actually want to hear. So, yeah, people don't really feel sorry for her. She probably should never have had the job. It was sort of an accidental prime minister. It probably wasn't supposed to happen. So it's kind of interesting that she's even there at all.
Yeah, the Conservative Party, they wasted 3 years with her as prime minister. Boris Johnson, who everyone wanted to replace David Cameron when he resigned after the referendum, he ended up not running because his former ally Michael Gove was going to run as well, and they ended up knocking each other out. Now Boris Johnson is the front runner this time. He's offered a hard Brexit by the new deadline by October, saying that if agreement can't be reached, we'll just crash out. And everyone's saying that he's setting the standard for what Brexit should be. And Theresa May, she clung on to wanting to have some sort of deal. I don't know why it was so important to her. But let's also remember that Theresa May, she called an election 3 years early in 2017 because she thought she was going to get a overwhelming majority against Jeremy Corbyn. It ended up being a hung parliament and weakened her position, and like she was never going to recover from that.
No, yeah. So Boris Johnson is the household name. He's the one everyone knows about. And it's the rise of the Germans. You think about it. You got Trump in the US, and then you got Boris in the UK. So it's the rise of Germany all over the world. So Boris Johnson is the household name. He's the one people wanted. And he was a Brexiteer. He was a full-on Brexiteer. But he did sort of deny that position, and they did leave her to the mess. And that's the unfortunate part about it, is they, like Nigel Farage, they all bowed out. But Nigel said, he's going to bow out of being PM because he's not a career politician, and his whole shtick was to just get Britain out of the EU superstate. But now it's all happened again while he's come back. So.
Yeah, well, it sort of looks like he retired too soon. Well, he didn't retire. He just stepped down as UKIP leader. But he's come back with the Brexit Party. They came first. They've got 29 seats, 31.6% of the vote. Liberal Democrats, the strongest Remain party, they got 16 seats, 20% of the vote. You had Labour collapse, you had the Conservatives collapse even further, down to a measly 3 seats, and you also had the Greens and the Scottish National Party slightly up. So, yeah, that's what we were talking about before, the major parties.
Yeah, so the Brexit Party, it depends whether this was a protest vote against, so whether the people are trying to say, because the people, the UK especially, because it's such an old democracy, the people have worked out how to talk to their leaders through votes very strategically. And it's hard to know whether or not that this was a protest vote against the big parties, saying, hey, we're not happy with what you guys are doing, look what we can do to you in a general election in 22, or it was a genuine vote and it's a reflection of what they might be looking to do in these general elections. I mean, the UK is such an old democracy. We know that they can push big parties around and push them out eventually if they're not happy with it's happened before. I don't see why it wouldn't and couldn't happen again. But yeah, that's the big debate. Is it a protest vote, or is it something more genuine? Is it something where this could really, really put pressure on the government and the two big parties to really think about their position in the general election? That's massive. If not, if it's still the left sort of two evils thing, then it's a protest vote, I guess.
Well, the European elections, the UK people, they're not voting for a government. They're voting for how they feel about Europe. And so UKIP came first in 2014, 5 years ago. And so Brexit parties, its, or you'd call it its successor, has come first as well. But in the 2015 general, UKIP didn't do well. Nigel Farage failed to win a House of Commons seat. But let's get to the Brexit Party, which basically has all of the old guard of UKIP, which left at the end of last year because they didn't like the direction that new leader Jared Batten was going, embracing the anti-Islam movement in the UK. He hired Tommy Robinson as an advisor. There was sort of a lot of people sort of wondering, why is Farage, you know, he's so upset about this. But Brexit Party as a single issue party, it's been a success, and UKIP only got 3% of the vote. I mean, it's nothing now.
Yeah, so Tommy Robinson also campaigned and he didn't do very well.
Yeah, 2.24% of the vote in Northwest England, 38,000 votes.
Yeah, so basically he got the same as almost Fraser Anning here in Australia. So those two campaigned kind of on the same issues. And you can tell the sort of relative of the two countries, how many people care about those issues. Yeah, people might say that's bad, but I think that's not too bad for a vote. I mean, almost 40,000. You're a single independent person, big name, obviously. He's got it, but for people to actually vote for you, that's actually pretty good. But again, percentage wise, it's not good enough to get him over the 4% or anything like that. But on Brexit, yeah, it's a single party issue, which tells you what the actual issue is in Britain. And the issue is that people voted for a clean Brexit and they want that delivered, and that the Parliament is not delivering on a clean Brexit. And therefore, until a Parliament does deliver on a clean Brexit, they're going to keep swaying their votes and their feelings towards people that do support that notion. Like you said, UKIP did very well in that. But Nigel Farage is a bit of an elitist. He's a bit of a you know, snotty nose, if you want.
Well, he's a merchant banker.
Yeah, he's a bit of a snotty, like he is a bit of a toff, and I can see why he wouldn't, you know, why he would think he was above the whole Islam, Jared Batten, UKIP lower thing. Jared Batten, he had to go. He ran with popular-ish candidates, like people like Sargon Avocard and that other one, the vampire type guy. They're both very big on social media, but you know, these guys not, you know, they don't have any political experience. They don't have any, they've never been elected.
Yeah, don't know how to fundraise, that sort of thing.
No, they just know how to run big YouTube channels and critique the hard left and all this sort of stuff, and how to get eyeballs. So, you know, Jared Batten, he tried. You got Katie Hopkins over there supporting him, you know, trying to get some attention, waving about. But it's not enough. People want it, are interested in that big issue, and that big issue is get Claude Juncker out of my life.
Well, it shows then that the left in the 2016 Brexit referendum, they claim that people were voting for, you know, racism, but like, of course, being anti-Islam is not racist, but it shows that the people in 2016, they weren't voting on, you know, any particular, like, immigration. They were just voting on leaving the European Union.
Yeah. So it would be actually kind of, I've always wanted to ask a lefty, you know, if Islam is a race, then what race is it? Like, I want to turn this on their head, because if you're a lefty and you advocate this idea that Islam is a race, I mean, what race is it? Because then it probably end up being Arab, I guess, maybe, because that's the majority, but there's also a lot of Chinese Muslims, and there's
Pakistani.
Pakistani, and well, if you're in Britain, you call them Asian or whatever. But I mean, what race is it? Like, actually, if you advocate that position in the comments, tell us what race is it. Or if it generally is a race and not a religion, then that's really, really weird. I just want to turn it on their head and say to you out there, please tell us and explain how that actually works, because I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But all you ever hear on that position is, oh, it's not a race, it's a religion. But let's actually hear from their perspective on how it's defined as a race. Anyway, what were we saying? So it's not racist. Oh, there was a time when Nigel Farage stood in front of a bus with a whole bunch of invading refugees or whatever they were, and they said, oh, well, that defines how it's right. But that's a subject. It's a subject called mass immigration, you know, from all these places. So, the EU creates a whole forest of laws. It creates a mechanism of bureaucracy. It sucks money, and it sucks. It's like a giant vacuum cleaner that sucks the life, the money, and the energy out of countries to create these giant bureaucracies. And people say we don't want that because we want to make decisions here in our country. The UK is uniquely positioned to reconnect with the Commonwealth, to reconnect with the WTO. It's really good friends with the US, which Europe is slightly not right now. So the UK can do okay on its own. It just doesn't have that many people, you know, but it can do okay. It's on its own. It's a seafaring nation. It'll be fine. It has its own space agency. It doesn't need the EU space agency like some of these little countries. It'll be all right. So that's what they want. They said, let's just leave and let Europe do its own thing. We'll trade with Europe. We'll be friends with Europe. That's fine. But we don't want to have our laws made over there and hear this giant sucking machine of billions of dollars every year going to support people we never heard of.
Going back to Tommy Robinson, he blamed his small vote on the fact that he was banned from Facebook, where he had over a million followers. Now, he's got a growing Telegram channel. Last time I checked, he's nearly up to 40,000, but it's a lot less than he had on Facebook. But everybody knows who Tommy Robinson is. Obviously, Tommy's campaign, it was a sort of shoestring campaign. It was just him, supporters like Avi Yemeni going around the country. It didn't have the big resources that, because basically the Brexit Party, it was starting all over again, because Nigel Farage and the other UKIP MEPs felt that the party was ruined, and so they had the political skills to create a new one, have a reincarnation, and it's worked in less than 6 months.
Yeah, so the Brexit Party had a lot of money behind it, a lot of $25 donations, which was the price to sign up, and so it had a couple of million dollars. It also had big people like the guy who owns 700 or 900 pubs in the UK. I've forgotten his name, sorry about that. But he owns about 700 or 900 pubs in the UK, and he donated a huge amount of money as well. So they had big supporters. Then they also had old guard from the Conservative parties coming over, and then they had, you know, the general public, which also rallied to their cause. So the Brexit and a lot of UKIP people move over. So the Brexit Party was very well positioned. It was only less than 6 weeks old, so it had a very short campaign. It had a very short time to generate a lot of enthusiasm, to turn around at the end of and say, you know, we are the party that's going to represent this issue. You're right, it's only a one issue party, and it's only the European elections, and that's why it's up to that's why it's so is this a protest vote? Will this have implications at the general? Because Labour, Jeremy Corbyn didn't know what he was doing. He had a little bit of everything. Like, he stood there with the Lib Dems on one hand, and he waved around, and he said, oh, well, we'll support these guys. But then he also had some Brexiteers there, and he was saying, well, we've got to honour the referendum for democracy.
Yeah, I mean, Corbyn, he wants Brexit to have his input on it. He's been pushing a lot of amendments to protect certain industries and interest groups. So he's been a lot better than his party.
Yeah, they use the environment as a way to, you know, we have to protect these environmental laws as a way to say bureaucracy. But so I don't know. He was a bit all over the place, and their vote collapsed as well because people didn't really know what they were standing for. See, it's very clear with the Brexit Party, we want out because that secures our democracy, because right now, British democracy, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing for people out there, it's something that's very, very old and they've always respected until now. For some reason now, they don't like it. And so the elites have gone back on that democracy. And even the suggestion that, that there should be another referendum. Well, if you actually add up the statistics on what just happened, it's the same as the referendum. It's basically, if you add it all up, it ends up at 52-48, which is the same as the referendum. So the people saying over and over and over again on this issue, respect our voice. And the elites, they didn't do that. The Westminster folk, they didn't do that. And so that's what they're so angry about. And so Jeremy didn't have the slice of leadership. He said, oh, we'll have a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I'm trying to please both sides. While Theresa says, oh, yes, I am definitely pro-Brexit, but her party is absolutely not, and she let them get away with it. So people said, all right, we're sick of this. We're going either way. We're either saying Lib Dems, which is totally anti-democratic, and that'll open up a whole gateway of crisis, or we're going Brexit Party, which will respect democracy, at least on this issue, and then we'll try and repair democracy after that.
Well, the Conservative Party, after their decimation, I mean, they have to deliver on Brexit this time by October. That's what Boris Johnson has promised. I mean, it's at the stage now where they've either got to support Brexit or die. It's interesting that a lot of Labour MPs are now saying, oh, we should support a second referendum. That's what Deputy Tom Watson has said, that we need to get back votes. We from the Lib Dems and the Greens, we need to be pro Remain. And now this second referendum folly, it's basically because Parliament can't agree to a deal, and so you put the deal to the voters in another referendum, but the voters, they only get the choice of accepting a crap deal or remaining in the EU, which is not what they voted for. They already voted to leave the European Union.
Yeah, so that's very interesting, Tim. So Theresa May actually said, I think 100, they counted it up, like 183-5 times in public that Brexit was going to be on May 5th or whatever, and it didn't happen. So with Boris Johnson, I think he would do it because he was a Brexiteer. We all saw him zip line down, waving the flag, and we will leave, and he went in the car spinning around, and we all saw that, and I think Boris won't lie. I think he'll either have a deal or he won't. Just done. But Theresa, as she was a Remainer, she decided, all right, that's it. But they don't have a presidency, so they can't override Parliament.
Yeah, it's still in a very precarious place, UK politics. I mean, Brexit has dominated the politics for the past 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And rightly so, because they had a referendum. David Cameron gave them a referendum, the referendum choice. What the left say, the referendum we never had to have. And he gave them the choice, and they said leave, and they haven't done it. And they didn't even have to invoke Article 50, but they did. And so they've extended and extended and pretended and pretended, and it's running out of time. And that these results might be a reflection of the general election, because if they are, then these big parties better do something now.
Well, they've got time. They're the next general election, because the UK has 5-year terms, isn't due until 2022. I don't think that either party is wanting to go to an early election, given the European election result in 2017. Jeremy Corbyn said, you want an early election, bring it on. But they'll certainly want to sort of sharpen their positions. Jeremy Corbyn, it looks like he'll stay as Labour leader. I mean, the moderates in the Labour Party, they haven't been able to unseat him. As we mentioned, Change UK, it's borne out because people think there's too much anti-Semitism in the UK Labour Party. But yeah, they haven't been able to blast Corbyn off that chair.
Yeah, no, and I think he'll hold on for a good while longer. You know, it's very hard being lefty nowadays because you have to balance on this great mass of moderate lefties and a very angry, noisy, hard left, which is growing. It's the same here in Australia. And it's not so much to an extent in the US. The reason is because Bernie has most of those guys under control. They break off a little bit, but Bernie has those guys under control. Here in Australia, you've got a very radical Greens, agenda, and that fuels this very radical sort of break off, which is barely in control by Labor here in Australia, and which Bill Shorten struggled with. So they go around saying we have to ban Sky News and shut down the internet and do all this crazy stuff. And it's very hard for someone like Bill Shorten to control that crazy left, especially when he's not being assertive. And also he keeps coming out with his own radical policies. In the UK, he's got a different problem. There's the same sort of problem in the UK. You've got Jeremy, who's sort of... because the big thing about anti-Semitism and stuff is because they stack minorities hardcore in their votes, and a lot of the minorities are Muslims and others who are anti pro British, traditional British people, traditional British voters, but they're still highly conservative people. They're still highly traditional conservative people that have nothing to do with the actual party that they are a part of, the Jeremy Corbyn thing. So they call themselves Labour, they run around and look like Labour, but they're actually fundamentally, very traditional conservative, and they hold on to their old views, and there's a lot of anti-Semitism that floats around in those old views. It's not the same as here as in... It's not the same sometimes here in Australia, where some of those minorities are Chinese or such, which have businesses and they float the other way. They float the conservative way because it actually benefits them. This in the UK, it's a different dynamic altogether. And yeah, so yeah, Change UK should be deleted. They should just merge with the Lib Dems.
Now, there was a lot of hope and momentum after the 2016 Brexit referendum that other EU member states would be able to leave. There was obviously Marine Le Pen, she wanted France to leave. There was obviously the Party for Freedom in the Netherlands. But given how difficult the Brexit process has been for Britain three years on, it's sort of... It's diluted the momentum in those other places. But Marine Le Pen, the National Rally, they outpolled Emmanuel Macron's party in the European elections. Although in Germany, the Alternative for Deutschland, they only got around 7%. Germany is the heart of the EU. They still voted for the Christian Democrats, the pro-EU party.
Yeah, well, because it benefits the majority. Germany is the big exporter in all this. So Germany needs a cheap euro in a way, because they're the giant exporter. They're trying to compete with China. They have problems with China more than anybody. And so they need their periphery to be breaking down, and then they need to use the surplus to control that periphery. And that's what Greece and the Mediterranean, and that's what Italy, even to a lesser extent, and Spain to a lesser extent, that's what all of that is about. It's the same thing in the US. Like the more problems that happen in Mexico, so the more drug cartels, the more deaths, the more fighting, the cheaper the peso is, so that they want instability in that country. So that they can push their manufacturing there and all that sort of stuff, so it's cheaper to manufacture and just import back into the US. That's what Germany wants in these other countries. So the Christian Democrats, although they get swamped, the German people have kind of lost their will. They don't really fight for that much right now. So all they can do is individually stack money. So that's why the Christian Democrats are doing so well, because... and they have been for such a long time, is because the actual periphery of Europe breaking down is of no concern to them. They don't care about that. As long as Brussels can hold in with all these mechanisms, and you're right, Tim, it's been a hectic time just getting the UK out of there. The interesting thing is the UK is such a big block. It's an unusually big block that wants to do it. We haven't had really test cases with smaller blocks, which probably would have like Cyprus or something probably should have left when they had the banking crisis, but they didn't. So we've got this big test case with Brexit and the UK, which means that it sets a precedent for what others and how easily and all that others can do it. And because it's the big one, you know, it's how it can do it. So Europe needs to make this as complicated as possible. It needs to make it as painful as possible to show all these other countries that you don't leave, while it still continues to spend and buy off these peripheral nations for Germany, so that they continue their instability mechanism to cheapen exports in order to make Germany essentially stronger. So because Germany's competing with China. So I'm not surprised that the Germans are still swinging Christian Democrats. The nationalists in a lot of these countries, Austria, Hungary, all these sort of stuff, you can watch the nationalism coming towards Germany as it gets more. So you had the Golden Dawn first way back in Greece way back in 2011 or something, and they were the first sort of hardcore people, and then as the destruction gets more, it gets closer and closer to Germany, and right now we're at about Hungary. It's coming, but it's not right at the doorstep of Vienna yet, if you know what I mean. So that's kind of interesting. So I can see why the German populace main, because they're still making money, they're still getting rich, they're still doing very well from the destruction of Europe, and they'd want to continue that. But the ADF is definitely the one to watch.
Yeah, and they were initially just a sort of soft Eurosceptic party, but obviously with the migrant crisis affecting Germany the greatest, they've been able to do well in a lot of state and federal elections, and that's obviously helped nationalists in the south, such as Viktor Orban, Law and Justice Party in Poland, Sebastian Kurz in Austria, though he's facing a no confidence motion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Kurt, that's very sad that he might be caught up in a corruption scandal. I read that. He's been very strong, very powerful, very strong. And yeah, now he might be on his way out, but he'll be replaced by someone better, I hope, and hopefully they can continue. Yeah, so Europe is a very dynamic, politically interesting place, and that's why I like focusing on Europe. I think Europe's an extremely it's a place of extreme change right now. The hard right and the hard left, and when people say, oh, you know, you're just a Eurosceptic, you know, you just I've written things, I've done things, and I've tried to show the European Union and the people how to adjust their policies so you don't get the hard right and the hard left, because I'm actually really scared of the hard left. I mean, that's the big genocidal crazy one that we don't want. And so I'd rather the center win than the hard left. You know, the hard right or the right doesn't bother me so much, but the left is what we want to stop. And I've tried to advocate and show the European Union, especially. I have some friends in European Parliament, one of which I'm trying to get on this show, and you'll meet later. Hopefully we can do that. I think he might get elected again, actually. So I've tried to show the European Union this is what you should be doing in order to maintain yourself if you want to be maintained, but don't let the hard left rise. But they don't want to listen because they're in a bubble. They don't care about the poor, they don't care about the big issues, and they don't care about they don't care about European history. They're trying to rewrite European history in their own image, and it's turning into a Tower of Babel situation, or Babel.
Well, the hard right leaders, the nationalists, they're being elected in Eastern Europe because they remember what it was like to be part of a pan-European bloc in the Soviet Union and its satellite states, and so they remember how much they suffered during that Cold War period, and that's why they've swung nationalist. And while Western Europe has gone for these postmodern, liberal, globalist, elitist bureaucracy parties.
Yeah, so Europe has done a reverse. It's done a complete reverse. So you've got the old Soviet Empire is breaking up and becoming stronger in their national identities, while the core of Europe, which is Germany, and its peripheral, which includes France and others, in Scandinavia. It's just given up, and it said, all right, we hand over all of our identity to an unnamed institution in Brussels. So yeah, it's a very weird situation. It's not the worst crisis that Europeans have ever faced. It faced much greater crises, but what they are doing, which is scary, is allowing basically a fifth column to be built within their countries, and that will be the cause of massive turmoil in the future.
And we should also say that the European Parliament that's elected, it has no real power. It can only vote on legislation that's put forward by the European Commission. It can't initiate legislation. Most of these laws are created by the bureaucracy. That's sort of why we call it a sort of virtue signaling election, because the main games are still going to be the proper national elections to come. The next one in France and the Netherlands, and of course the UK, they'll be the one to watch. Germany's just had theirs.
Yeah, you're right. So it's the bureaucrats, it's the Jean-Claude Junckers, and it's the bureaucrats nobody's ever heard of that do it, because it was born out of the coal and steel community in the 1950s when they rammed all that together, and it just kept growing, it just kept getting stronger, and the European Federalists said, oh, you know, we know what we can do with this economic treaty. So at the base of it is an economic treaty, and it's still basically just an economic treaty between all these countries. So yeah, it's European federalism by stealth. And it's just grown like a cancer out of that idea, which was just simply reducing tariffs on steel trading.
Well, we'll follow the next stage of this European project closely, as we have in the past. Thanks for joining me and giving your analysis, Steele.
Thanks very much, Tim. And I enjoy the show. I love TU Waves. I think it's a fantastic show. You always have very interesting guests on, very interesting people on. And thanks to everybody who's come on, because it makes it a great show, and it's always a lot of fun.
And we've got some exciting episodes in the works, so stay tuned for those. As I stated on the Uncuckables last Thursday, I'm on a 30-day Facebook ban, so I'm spending more time on free speech social media, where The Unshackled also has a presence. We're on gab.ai/TheUnshackled. We're also on minds.com/the_unshackled. We also have a MeWe page at MeWe.com/p/TheUnshackled. And we also have our growing Telegram channel on the encrypted messaging service t.me/TheUnshackled.
Well, while we're talking about that, can I just say that if you Bing us, if you Bing The Unshackled, if you go to Bing.com and you type in The Unshackled, you're going to get unparalleled access to The Unshackled. It's absolutely fantastic. If you go to Bing.com, just type in The Unshackled, you'll see all the videos, you'll see everything. It's really, really good. You'll know what I mean if you have a look there.
And remember that to continue operations, we rely on the financial support of our followers. You can pledge over at patreon.com/theunshackled or directly via paypal.me/theunshackled. You also have our premium membership option on our website, theunshackled.net/supportoptions/premium-membership. Thank you to all those who've contributed recently. It all goes a long way. So thanks once again for your company, and we'll see you next show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Unshackled Waves. Please visit theunshackledwaves.net for all the ways to subscribe and follow the show. Don't forget to pick up your free ebook at theunshackledbattlefield.net, and keep checking out theunshackled.net for all the latest news and commentary.